With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon.
Okay, on the count of three, we're going to clap. Three, two, one, clap. My bed is my workspace, and I love Pillow Talk.
When life gives you quarantine, stay stay at home.
Oh my fucking God. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 151, but it's actually technically 151 to at least 154. It's your pal, Auntie Sarah, and I am so glad to be joined by none other than OG of the AG, Damian Bellino,
your
writer,
uncle,
producer.
Zio Damian has entered the building. Come see ZZ.
Writer, producer, senior whatever at VH1, host of the amazing podcast you might know her from, and you might know him from co-creating Andy's Girls with me, your pal.
Here we are. All those years later, who knew we would be recording remotely. We are basically in the same neighborhood, separated by Central Park, recording currently. I'm staring at you via computer. Neither of us understand technology, so it's going very well.
It's going super well. So just so the listeners know, it's Monday, early eve. We actually recorded episode 151 last night. And then even though we are technical whizzes, something crazy happened to the audio. So we recorded a full 90-minute episode of the Andy's Girls.
ZZ then messed something up over here.
But honestly, I was so thrilled with the mess up because any chance to talk to Damian, I will gladly take. And the weirdness is that so this whole Corona Michigas has forced me to do satellite recordings, which people have actually been asking for a while with like specific guests and housewives and stuff. And I've always been kind of a little bit of a shit, which is very surprising, and have said, no, I like to record in person. Like I like to record with people on my couch, shooting the shit, talking to you person to person.
Totally.
Then, you know, we have this like deadly global pandemic and I'm like, okay, so how does that affect me? So I guess I have to figure out technology. So we're doing this great thing where we're recording on our own equipment. You're using yours, I'm using mine, and we get to look at each other through Zoom. And we've just poured ourselves a healthy glass of, what are you drinking? You have ice in yours.
Yeah, because it wasn't cold, but we had to get to the recorder.
What kind of wine are you drinking?
I forget. It's Argentinian.
So my issue is the last couple times I've been taking these trips, like going to Paris, going to Barcelona, I come back with wine because I think what better gift than to get trashed on a random night in New York. But I didn't. So I put them all in my bar cart. So I've had wine in my bar cart from like a couple trips to Paris, Spain, whatever. And they've just been sitting there because I've been hoarding them. And then a friend came over late into the summer and was like, Sarah, what is this wine doing on your bar cart? I had forgotten that thanks to a lack of air conditioning in my living room, I essentially cooked all of that wine.
Oh my God.
I know. And so now we're in a global pandemic and I'm like, fuck it. So I opened a bottle yesterday and tried it and it tasted crazy. So I opened up a different bottle. Thank God my wines from Spain are like still really good. And because I think I put those in the fridge right away. So I had a great wine and got a little sloshed. And then today I opened up another bottle and it's not great, but it's like it'll do. Like it tastes like apple juice. Like if I cook a wine, does that mean the alcohol goes away? Do we have any wine people in the audience at home?
That'll do. That'll do, pig. What's that from?
Babe.
It's from like Animal Farm, right?
No. It's from Babe, you motherfucker.
It's not from Babe. Is it from Charlotte's Web?
No, you piece of shit. It's from Babe. It's what James, what's his face, who keeps getting arrested for caring about the environment, Cromwell or whatever, says to Babe. He's like, that'll do. Did you just call me a pig? You're a pig slut.
I
think it's from The West Wing.
That's what my Grindr profile is. It says pig slut and co-creator of Andy's Girls. I deleted Grindr because I feel insane during this time and I cannot have people trying to tempt me to meet them because they think that we're going to be fine. It's insane. Gay people are insane.
Okay, so here's my issue with dating, and I've been talking about this with some friends, like dating in the time of Corona. I actually don't think it's a bad idea and think it could actually be kind of romantic to swipe right and have like a video first date. I actually think.
Oh, I had a video first date last week. 100%.
Oh, and how did it go?
It went great. I'm seeing him tonight on FaceTime.
Wait, so what's the problem?
I had to delete like Grindr and things that are like for immediate connection because people are like, oh, you're close. Do you just want to like meet up tonight? And I'm like, no. Yes, but no.
Wait, so the people on Grindr, do you think they're just like sexting now since they can't actually meet up, hopefully?
Well, I think that there's probably people that are also meeting up.
Meeting up?
Yeah.
That's a downer. I mean, guys, let me know if you're dating right now. I am not because I realize that I have like a 95% cancellation rate. And I realize that I'm not going to be able to get away with canceling on Hinge if everybody knows that like none of us have anywhere to be. Like that's the problem that I face is I can't be like, oh, my God, work emergency. Because, no, it's like I'm literally in PJs doing absolutely nothing. And tomorrow my schedule is also clear. So I don't know how people deal with being inconsiderate in the age of like a being forced to stay home. Am I the only asshole out there? I don't know how to cancel. I would have to be consistent. That feels like a lot of effort.
I mean, I had a friend just cancel on me for plans tonight and I laughed. It made me laugh so hard. Also, it's like my like most reliable friend. So the fact that she canceled really made me chuckle.
Is this somebody I know?
She was like, I'll explain later. But yeah, I think I don't want to put her business out there on Friend Street, but.
Oh my God. Yeah, I need to kind of figure that out. I do have to say, so this is my, I guess everybody and their mother knew about Zoom. I had no idea that Zoom existed until this whole Michigas happened. But it's interesting. Like I had a meetup on House Party, the first time I'd used that the other night with a bunch of fellow Bravoholics. Shout out to all of you. And it was great. Like we all literally were getting trash, yelling at each other about Potomac. And it was like fucking wonderful. Bringing people together, Corona.
Is Michigas a Hebrew word or a Yiddish word?
Yeah, it's Yiddish.
How many housewives have been Jewish besides Jill Zarin? Who else is Jewish?
Well, Jill Zarin is enough of a Jew for at least 6 to 7 housewives. So you need to get that right out of the way. Jules is Jewish, she told you repeatedly. Heather Thompson is middling. I could see her being Jewish. I could see her just appreciating our heritage and culture.
Holla
with a CH. Bethany is
Jewish, right?
Bethany says she's Jewish. I don't believe that she's a practicing Jew, but I think she's, it's like Heather Dubrow, I just assume was super Jewish. And then I found out she celebrates all holidays and I don't know how I feel about that. She calls
That's
herself,
so Heather Dubrow.
It's so Heather Dubrow. She calls herself a Buddha Jew. So I don't know what to do with a Buddha Jew. Who else in Jersey? So I can only think of Sigalit. Atlanta, I don't know of any Jews. Beverly Hills, nobody?
Someone must be Jewish, no?
Oh, Kyle. Kyle's kids are, I think, being raised in the Jewish faith. Yeah, because they all had bat mitzvahs. So they're Jewish because Mauricio is Mexican and Jewish. And I want to say that Kyle converted for him, but that could be 1,000% wrong. I want to say that. I'm saying it. Look at me. I don't know if that's factually correct.
Great.
And Potomac, nobody's Jewish. And Orange County, nobody's Jewish. Which, I mean, listen, get another Hebrew in there.
I'm surprised that it just doesn't seem like there's that many Jews, though, in the canon.
It's surprising that there's not a current Jew on New York. Is Leah Jewish?
I have no idea.
Well, I mean, listen, I feel like we should talk about New York in the sense that the taglines just became released to the public and they are horrific.
Did you see my tweet?
No, what's your tweet?
I tweeted, do you know Evan Ross Katz? He's been on your show.
Of course.
He tweeted like 10s across the board for these taglines. And I was like, they are so bad.
Maybe all of them together add up to a single 10. But
Sonia's giving like a 5 or a 6 by herself. And then I guess everybody else is giving a negative like 0.1.
Yeah, I was going to say they're in the negative. So let's review them. Dorinda Medley, I'm not always right, but I'm never wrong.
Bad.
Not good. Ramona Singer, I don't need to find love. I love myself.
not terrible, but not good.
Agree. Sonia Tremont Morgan of the Upstate Tremonts. I'm no one's accessory. I'm the whole lifestyle brand.
Stupid, funny, knowing, except she doesn't know, but not amazing.
I don't actually understand what she's saying. I'm no one's accessory, period. I'm the whole lifestyle. I feel like those two things, I get what she's doing. Like,
you think
I
that
understand.
It should be like, I'm the full ensemble, instead of like, I'm not an accessory, I'm the full ensemble.
I just don't think, I think it's really clunky. I'm no one's accessory, I'm the whole lifestyle brand.
I'm nobody's bracelet, I'm somebody's Fabletics.
Oh my god, Luann de Lesseps, raise the curtain. I just want to kill myself saying this. Raise the curtains, lower the lights, I'm taking center stage in my life. My god, you guys, I have no idea what she's referencing. I
first of all imagine. It's so fucking long. Second, there's no rhyme in there, so it's just like seven lines that are not, there's no musicality to them. It's terrible.
So I think what production said was, if you say the word cabaret, you're losing a third of your salary. And so she was trying to figure out how to say cabaret 7 to 15 times without actually using the word cabaret. Raise the curtains, lower the lights, I'm taking center. Like, you don't need all three. Okay, there's 3 points she's making, 3 actions. 1, raise the curtains. 2, lower the lights. 3, I'm taking center stage in my life. You can have 2 of those. You do not need all 3. Lower the lights, I'm taking, well, maybe that doesn't make sense, but yada yada, something else. You don't need all 3. And also, the name of her new show is Marry, Fuck, Kill. So, like, couldn't we do something with that? I don't know. It's so much. She should have just used the word cabaret. We know what the fuck she's talking
about. She should have been
about.
Like, welcome. Bienvenue. Welcome.
P.S. How do we think that Luann is handling this? And I don't mean sobriety, which she's no longer practicing. But as far as, like, her career stuff, she's got to be not handling this.
I mean, I think everybody is probably feeling insane about, like, what it means for their careers.
But I think that Luann, sort of similar to what I am dealing with, where, like, not a salaried, I mean, I don't have the count's money, rest in peace, but since she, you know, got remarried, so she lost all that alimony, I am, you know, an event producer, so I don't have any protections. I'm a freelance contractor, so if special events aren't going to exist for a long time, I am full on completely fucked. And with Luann, she's done this whole thing where it's like touring for live audiences. So I don't know what the fuck she's going to do in real time. I guess her backup plan is being a TV star. I mean, like, at least she has that to fall back on. Maybe she'll be a better housewife as a result because of all of this pent up frustration about not touring. Is that too much? Am I giving her too much credit?
I think you're giving her too much credit. And I think, like, everyone is going to feel pent up insanity about their careers because you can't leave your house. But I think that it's not going to make her a better housewife because filming for what they filmed is going to be done. And therefore, anything that happens once filming resumes, she's going to be a terrible person again.
God, I hope. I mean, now that I'm thinking about this, the fact that all of these women are hopefully quarantined, with the exception of some of our former housewives who've made a delightful comedy routine out of saying that this is all a fallacy and let's go look Victoria and like, quarantine is so funny. Let me look at all these fancy cars. I'm out. I'm hugging my friends. I'm low on toilet paper. Everybody dance. Where it's like, you're a piece of shit. I want you to die. Oh, I should not actually say that now that we're dealing with a global pandemic. I want you to learn your lesson while staying healthy, but just repenting. I'm curious how some of these women who are like at home, stuck at home, maybe they just finished recording a season. Maybe they're dealing with like being freaked out if you're a New York housewife, or maybe Potomac with like, how am I going to handle doing press for the show when I'm not able to leave my house? And also maybe some residual anger they have with cast members from stuff that hasn't aired, or just shit that's swimming in their heads because they have nothing else to distract them, may in fact lead to more interesting seasons when we're up and running. Is that maybe that might be the wine.
Well, it's just interesting. I think that we talked about this a little bit last time we talked, which was yesterday when we messed up the recording. But like, I think that Atlanta is giving us a lot of off-camera content as far as like drama between Nene and Candy and beef between like Portia versus Kenya and Candy. Have you ever been reading about that stuff also?
Tell me everything.
That apparently Kenya and Candy are saying they have receipts about a conversation
with Portia
about
icing. They said it on the after show. Yeah, that she didn't want to break up with, that she did never, she was the one taking the lead saying, like, you guys can never, ever become friends with Nene again. Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's a lot of stuff happening in the after show and on social media about the women and like interviews that they've done in the press in the last like 3 weeks that I don't know what that's going to look like if and when we ever get a reunion. I mean, my assumption is that maybe that they will film a reunion in like August and then the new season will start like a month later or something. Like they'll wrap up what they can and then they'll let the rest of it bleed into the new season.
Can I ask you something? So you work in production at VH1. You work on specific shows. You've been on set for reunions.
In a digital component, though.
Okay. But that might actually be even more helpful. So here's my question. So, like, we've seen, obviously, Andy was planning on shooting Watch What Happens on his phone, I believe, and then very, very unfortunately, as we've learned, he tested positive for corona, so he's at home, hopefully healing, getting better, and we're sending all of our love to him. But a lot of these talk shows, including what Watch What Happens was planning on doing, you know, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, Conan, they've all said that they're planning on using their like phones and Skyping to produce, you know, like the next round of shows so they can get content up. Why is it that they are not able to use a real camera? Like, why is there not a happy medium between Skyping and like having a fully produced show that can be sent to their homes? And the reason I say that is because when we get ready for hopefully doing an Atlanta reunion or any reunion, likely it's going to be super, super scaled down depending on how many people can actually be in the motherfucking room at a time. And I'm wondering if there's a middle ground. So it might not look as glossy as reunions have looked in the past, but it's not going to look like iPhone footage. It's a two-parter. One, do you know why it is that they're using iPhones and not some sort of happy medium that's mailed to them? And two, how do you think the look of reunions will change once we're hopefully allowed to be in public without inadvertently murdering someone?
Well, I think the thing that the first part of your question, I think that the reason that people are inclined to like use things like Zoom and Skype, and that's why they are using their phones, because the iPhone camera is a strong and good camera and you're able to like basically stream things where you can have producers like online but not necessarily like seeing them. So I think that that's probably why places are doing things like that for now, because opposed to like using a real camera, but then it's just Jimmy Fallon pushing a button and recording like on a camcorder sort of situation.
So what do you think? I mean, do you think that when it comes time for Housewives to be out in the wild, that they will even be allowed to? I mean, do you think the reunion will look like it used to look like? Well, there, how are they going to scale this down? I'm guessing that it's going to be like a super, super, super skeleton crew. Like, none of these women maybe will even be able to have their own glam there. Like, maybe they're gonna have to slice off half the production and have fewer cameras.
I think it depends on how long they prolong it. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they just didn't have a reunion for Atlanta until like the fall, because I think they're just going to try to have to re-strategize the way, because I don't know that they're going to want to do some sort of like Zoom meeting with all of the ladies.
Right.
So rather than doing that, I feel like the alternative is just to wait until we have a better handle on like what things look like, and not to be irresponsible with that, but also not to compromise like what a show looks like on television.
I mean, and that's something that Andy said on social in the past week, which was, you know, people have been asking him, like, can't you do it with iPhones? Can't you do a reunion online? And he was like, no, it just wouldn't work. Like, a reunion cycle, he doesn't think would work if it was, you know, doing it like through house party or somewhere else, like a more high tech version. And he is not wrong in that sense. I do think that if you have a reunion versus Watch What Happens, where you can be a little kookier and if something goes wrong, it's fine. But the energy and the tension of being there in person for a reunion, I think, is incredibly, incredibly important. And if the reunion happens in several months, listen, as we've said, these women might be stewing on shit. They're certainly coming up with stuff to be angry and shady and mess with each other. They definitely have the time for it. So maybe a reunion that's happening many months after the premiere, Lord knows, potentially a year after they finished filming, isn't the worst thing, in that it will literally be reuniting with these people who they have not seen in the flesh for a very long time and rehashing stuff that has happened both on the show and online in the months since. Like, that's not, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I know that we're all freaked out about it not happening right now, and obviously, yada yada, fine print, we all want people to be safe and healthy, but for us, from a content perspective, if we can be patient and hope that they still are interested in doing a reunion, it might actually be a really strong reunion because of this delay.
Do you think... I don't know. It is interesting. I mean, people have new beefs. I mean, Nene sort of criticized Candy and about Candy was boring and all of this stuff. What?
So... Nene criticized Candy and is coming at Candy, and it's something that you and I have talked about offline, trying to figure out when this went from them being shady with each other to like the enormous vitriol that they seem to be expressing, which to me feels strange. I think it actually got really, really hot when Nene said she didn't understand why Phaedra couldn't come back, and that Candy was just doing this to be shady and should just welcome her back and get over it, completely ignoring or choosing to ignore or just wash over the fact that this wasn't a normal fight that happened. This was someone being accused of planning sexual assault and potentially losing their entire business empire because of someone else manipulating, regardless of whether or not a producer was involved. And I think Nene is trying to evade responsibility for saying that and is just doubling down on other shit. And Candy's obviously responding in all these online videos that are like Oscar winning, Emmy winning excellence.
And yeah, and it's like, it is strange. I mean, I think Candy is showing her power on the franchise in a way that she doesn't normally get to see. We don't get to see because people sort of think she's boring or like, you know, a more a quieter character. But I feel like in the way that Jill clearly wasn't going to come back on the show while Bethany was there, I feel like we're seeing that, based on what Nene is saying, that Candy has let them know, producers know, that she will leave the show if they bring Phaedra back. A sort of her or me sort of thing.
But like, different from Bethany and Jill, Bethany didn't want Jill to come back and I'm sure use some wait behind the scenes to be like, absolutely not, or I will only film with her in this context where we're crying at a funeral and I am having this like quasi full circle moment to satiate the audience without actually being responsible for developing a relationship with her. The Candy stuff is different to me because I feel like it's actually legal. Like, Phaedra, Queen Legal Eagle, decided to make this an all or nothing proposition when she decided to either create or add fuel to this psychotic rumor that she wanted to talk about on camera and fed to Portia. And I think it's so different. And because Phaedra made that choice, I feel like she has to live with the consequences, which is she should. I truly don't think she should ever be back on Housewives in any form, because I think what she did was like over what anyone else has done before. I think it crossed such a line and brings with it such legal consequences that how could you ever trust anything that she said. Like, I would just be like lawyered up. I wouldn't be able to film with her because I feel like she's such a liability. If I was Candy or even Portia or Eva or anybody else.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, what did you think? Candy brought that up in last night's episode. She said because Kenya was refusing to engage with Nini.
Right.
And then obviously things exploded and Kenya was like, I'll never get past it. And Candy was like, yes, you will. And you should, because like bigger things have happened to all of us.
Right.
And Kenya was like, no, they haven't. And then Kenya is annoying me currently. I'm on team Nini only in the fact that like Kenya is doing this thing this year where she's allowed to do everything to everybody else, but then she's not willing to be held accountable for any of her actions. And like, I don't remember that being Kenya's thing. Like, I feel like they all are shady to each other in the name of like comedy. But I feel like what Tanya did versus what Kenya did to retaliate, those things were not equal. And okay. Then also she did that thing to Marlo, which I thought was funny and petty and stupid and like not real. Like it was not an okay thing to do, but it was funny and I didn't care, except that 3 weeks later, she's so mad that Tanya brought a wig out, and now she's claiming that like it undermines her business. And then she retaliated with Tanya by bringing another woman and like targeting Tanya's fiance. And now she's saying she can't talk to Nini because Nini made comments about her baby. And like, I'm not defending what Nini said by like shaming a pregnant woman's body, but like Nini wasn't fucking talking about her kid. And like, Kenya is so good at doing this thing with like words where she's like, you're coming for my business. And Tanya's like, you had a wig shipped to me. I opened the box and that's what it was. Like, that was your wig. I'm not coming for your business. I brought it to be shady and funny. Nini like totally was inappropriate and made the wrong comment and like shouldn't have said that or come for Kenya and her body. But Kenya is using like, you came for my daughter. And I understand, like, when they rewound the tape and Nini says, like, you're pregnant with a buffalo. Like, I understand what Nini right. said and why it was wrong. But right. Kenya is using that to say, like, you said I'm pregnant with a buffalo, which is about my daughter. And it's like, okay. Nini is saying in the moment, I don't remember saying that. I am sorry. I was mad at you. I was not attacking your child, your unborn child. And Kenya's not hearing it. And, like, that's... She's a great housewife because of that, because she believes her own insane logic, but it's mm-hmm. really frustrating to watch someone say like, I'm sorry, I was mad at you, and I was just like being mouthy. I should have never said anything like that, but I never meant to like insinuate anything about your child. I was talking about you and that was wrong, but it wasn't about your kid. And Kenya's like, no, fuck that. No, Portia, it wasn't the same. She was talking about my kid. And it's like, it actually was the exact same thing. Nini had really disgusting behavior and fat shamed two women who either were pregnant or just had children. But what Kenya is like doing now is like rewriting the narrative the same way she did with Tanya, which is to say like, what you did was worse. And so I'm justified in either not engaging with an apology or not engaging with you and acting like what you did was worse to me. Like, I can't, the Tanya stuff was so uncalled for. And like, it was great television, but it was like so wild that a person acted like that was the same sort of thing. To attack someone's relationship on television, opposed to someone bringing a wig and being like, yeah, you have a natural hair business, but you also wear wigs sometimes, which is like, okay, lots of people wear protective hairstyles and wear a wig.
Okay, let's break this down. First off, Nini, I thought before last night's episode aired, I thought she was saying that Kenya, like, literally said that, like, Kenya was a water buffalo and scene.
Same.
So I did not believe, I thought Kenya was understanding an insinuation that I had not heard verbally. Then I saw the clip and I was like, oh shit, like, on this, she's technically right. Like, Kenya, I mean, Nini did say that stuff referencing, are you having a water buffalo? I think what Nini meant was because you look insane. But what she literally was saying was referencing Kenya's then unborn child. So I understand that. Portia, I felt like, proved herself as this ongoing miracle on ice style MVP who comes in with very, very funny confessionals and quips. And in the moment is able to show how a lot of these comparisons aren't being weighted out accordingly. Like Kenya saying Tanya, I understand the cookie lady was going too far, but I was annoyed about you pulling out that Canadian wig. And Portia's coming in to say to us, the audience, who are reacting as we see the episode, and she's saying in the moment, you cannot compare those two. They were both technically shady and inappropriate, but bringing on a woman who may or may not be trying to fuck or has been propositioned to fuck by someone's fiance is not on the same line, and having them participate in production filming is not on the same line as her talking shade about removing a wig. And you could make the same comparison with what Kenya was doing with Cynthia, where Kenya says it's not that bad, and she's like, well, it's not like Cynthia's making the wine, it's that Cynthia owns a wine shop, we're trying to educate her, I'm having fun. But what people are saying about my wig and my hair directly hurts my business a lot more, because I'm saying I'm an expert in this field. Cynthia's not saying she's an expert. She's a businesswoman, and that's very different. And I, of course, as I think you do, disagree with that comparison, because I think Kenya's disavowing responsibility for what felt like a secondhand, awkward moment with her friend, where the punchline seems to be on her friend not knowing enough about wine, but being a businesswoman who is selling wine. I don't think 52 Cent is saying to everybody, I know where all these grapes come from and watch me stomp them, oh joy. But I do think that questioning her intelligence when it comes to wine pairings is calling her business into question. And I think that Kenya is trying to disavow responsibility by holding other people to account, yet seems to be incredibly upset and frustrated when people are trying to do the same to her. Her walking back the Marlowe stuff, I found surprising. Like, I think that she cannot call into question Tanya's wig removal, which was a moment of 45 seconds, at least, that we saw on camera during a spa day, where you're literally pulling something out of the box, and not say that what she did with Marlo, which was an orchestrated symphonic band participating mega show of shows of shade, is not 10 times worse. You know, I think we're both saying the same thing, which is ultimately, thank God Kenya's back. She's shady as fuck and is willing to do anything. And the reason that, frankly, she's also so great to be back on the show is because she's so complicated and really truly does not seem able to take responsibility for her behavior. Like, I don't think it's a show. I think she does things because she knows that they will come off as a show on this TV show that she's on. But when she says she can't take responsibility, when she's having that meltdown where she's like losing her shit when Candy's running after her, I don't think that's for show. I think she really, truly is not able to take responsibility for stuff. And honestly, not to add an additional layer to it, shout out to the wine that I'm drinking, but this might be going way too far, so please tell me to shut the fuck up. But I wonder if for Kenya, when someone is critiquing her, regardless of whether or not is deserved, she might flash back to the mom stuff and feeling like when her mom refused to take ownership of having a child and said she didn't exist and said she didn't matter, maybe getting that kind of pushback where someone says you're behaving badly is like triggering to her in some way. Or maybe it's just more recent because of all of this stuff that's going on with her and Mark Daly, where she's getting so much criticism at home that she truly cannot withstand hearing a single ounce more, regardless of whether or not it was warranted. Does any of that make sense?
No, it did. And I thought that was interesting. I mean, like, I understood when she was walking off, I don't think that was acting. I think when she was like, Candy and she was like, I have real shit going on, or like, I have so much shit going on, I believe that, like, she's like, I don't have time to like deal with this because my relationship is crumbling and my family is in question. But you also have a job and you also agree to come on the girls trip, and I think that there is a level of like, you have to deal with this stuff because it's your job too. I think it was either on Candy's after show, or like, it was either the Bravo after show or Candy's Speak on It series. where she was saying how, you know, like, she was like, I love Kenya, but, like, Cynthia's company, like, you can think whatever you want about her and her knowledge of wine, but she has a storefront, and that's, like,
right.
that's a real investment of money into a company. So, right. like, Kenya's company is an online company, and that doesn't mean it's less than, but it also means that, like, Cynthia made a significant investment in her company.
100%.
And so for your, like, friend to, like, make a lot of jokes, like, well, it's different because I sell hair care company and I'm a CEO and Cynthia isn't a sommelier. She's a wine, like a store owner that sells wine. Like, I think that Kenya is going to be in the hot seat at the reunion whenever the fuck that happens, because I think that she thought, I don't know what she thought. I think that I thought beginning this season that NeNe was going to be in the hot seat and it was going to be like NeNe's swan song. And I feel like the middle of the season so far, it's really pivoted where it's like,
yeah.
not like I'm on team NeNe, but I feel like NeNe has suddenly decided to engage in the show in interviews on mm-hmm. online. And she's also mm-hmm. a presence on the show again. And also I feel like I see NeNe offering like superficial olive branches and Kenya refusing them, and also Kenya's behavior with Marlo and Tanya is like not helping things move forward. So I don't know. I'm anxious to see how the series or the season ends.
How many episodes away from the finale are we? It's just be soon, right? Not that I'm wishing for it, but no, just to say.
It should be soon, but Atlanta has a lot, so I'm not sure. The good news is that when Atlanta ends, it should Potomac. Be the start of Potomac coming back. So we must have it. Well, I don't know, though. I don't know what any of that means, because now that I think about it, normally there would still be like two or three reunions to come. So
right,
I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means for anything. Like if they're going to try to push Potomac up, or if they're going to keep it where it normally was, so that they can buy themselves more time to hopefully get back into filming reunions. I have no idea.
And I also, I don't think I'm wrong in saying this #. I'm still drinking wine, but I feel like in another interview, Andy said something about the fact that when they're editing these shows, because they have to do it at home, it's taking so much longer for them to... Oh, no, it was color. It was like when they were color correcting the shows, it's taking so much longer for them to like finish, like super, super finish, like put the bows on top of these episodes, because all these people who are editing and doing whatever else have to do it from home, or they don't have the same technology. And I'm sure that's having an I'm sure that's having an influence as well. I mean, with Kenya, man, God bless her. She's really going through some shit IRL during production. It just goes to show you the fire that's really been lit this season has, I think, been extraordinary, certainly compared to last. She is so, so important to this franchise. And even just having these conversations where we may not agree with her, I so appreciate her, like, fucking attendance record. You know, I really think that she has put up a lot more at risk than Linethia Leeks has, certainly this season. And Kenya's also done some really shady stuff. And Kenya truly does not seem to understand what it means to take responsibility for those crazy acts of drama or whatever that she's done. And her confusion and complications as a person just make her such a great leader in this franchise, which towers over so many others. I mean, we should talk about the Beverly Hills trailer, which, spoiler alert, I cover in a Patreon episode where I watch the Beverly Hills trailer live and record my reaction to it in real time so you guys can listen to that. Thank you. But, you know, we're having these conversations about Atlanta. I'm thinking about what NeNe has said on social, where she's like, nefarious sources have made me not able to have a spinoff. BCC, Candy coded everything. And, you know, Candy's put up this very, very well edited response to that on YouTube, where she breaks down all of the reasons that A, she would have nothing to do with NeNe not having a show, but B, P.S., here are the reasons NeNe doesn't have a spinoff show. A, she doesn't have enough of a storyline off of the show. B, she doesn't actually show all of her life. C, the cast of characters don't exist. And D, she's not directly pitching the network as Candy has done. And I really like look at these women on these shows, and, you know, I didn't understand why NeNe was still there. I don't love these moments where Nene is talking shit to production. And I know that's really unfair for me to say because I'm not surrounded by these people 24/7. And obviously there's an intimacy and a comfort factor there where, like, sort of how you can talk shit to family because you know they're not going anywhere. Like, I'm sure there's the same thing with production where you're surrounded by these people and they feel like an extension of a cast member themselves. And if she wants to go hide from filming something and pretending she has to pee, she's going to yell at them when they're like, get the fuck back out there. So while those moments kind of make me uncomfortable, she is at least giving us something in this second half. And I just assume that for the rest of the season, I would be like, what the fuck is Nene even doing? And obviously there are some stuff that we don't know about as far as why she wasn't featured in the top part of the season. But, you know, when I look at Nene versus Kenya, it's like a fucking Jurassic World, two huge, incredible, phenomenal powerhouses going up against each other. And I think that Kenya being on the show makes Nene such a better housewife than she would be. And Nene's instincts are to not actually participate in stuff, to do that passive aggressive, you know, if you say I don't have money, I guess I'm just poor kind of stuff, where she's not really engaging and she makes these weird passive aggressive remarks, her like signature phrase. And she's not really able to do that with Kenya. And I appreciate the two of them when they work opposite each other, because I don't think that Kenya needs Nene to be great, but I think at this point in her journey, Nene does need Kenya. And so as long as Kenya's on the show, I don't feel as strongly as I used to that Nene needs to leave. Like, does that make any sense? I don't know if that makes
absolutely.
Any sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. It is an interesting season. I will say that, like, I think it's interesting that Atlanta, of all of the franchises, has such a arsenal of friends of that are so integral to the cast, specifically this season with Tanya and Marlo. And I was thinking on this trip, like, I was like, oh my gosh, Eva's not on the trip. And I was like, they really don't need her. Like, I like her fine. I think she's beautiful. I like her family life. And I think she is sometimes funny, but like, just like, they don't really need her in the ensemble. Like, Marlo adds a level. Marlo and Tanya are both willing to do a lot of work because they're not main housewives yet.
Yes.
And so they're both willing to carry plot, push story, bring things up that other people might not be willing to bring up. But also Tanya is a totally different flavor than every other housewife on Atlanta. And I like them. I just thought it was interesting. Like, I was like, oh, I forgot Eva's not there. And I was like, I wonder if she will not come back next season. If they are like, if they get Nene and Kenya to both come back, they really don't need Eva.
They really do not need Eva. Tanya adds a very specific personality type, this cheery Canadian woman who seems very gracious and well and like grounded in herself. And obviously in her interactions with Kenya, she could have said a lot of shit and she really took the higher road. And that's actually something that's really nice to see, especially amongst these women, many of whom have become very successful for doing the exact opposite. And then there's Marlo, who's really growing on me, who has this whole stuff with like her nephews, and she is this super fabulous, you know, fashionista. Where is the money coming from? Maybe we'll never know specifics, but they are two very unique women. And then I look at Eva and like her storyline is what? That like she has kids? Like mazel. Right. I don't know what else to say to that. I'm not getting a sense of her personality. And maybe if I did before, it was just when she was going against people, but you know, she's an investment that they made that didn't pay dividends. And that's okay. Like sometimes some of these women come on and they might have a strong first season or they might not. And sometimes they come alive in their second and sometimes they don't. And at that point, it's time. You got to kind of cut them loose. There's so many other.
Well, I also like when
women on the show.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, do it.
No, I was just going to say, like, she's fine. She doesn't add a ton to me. And I also don't mind her. But I also like when they, like, when they are willing to just, like, let it be. Like, I love that Shamia shows up at events and is, like, an unofficial friend of. Because she's really friends with these people. And something, like, when Lisa Wu shows up, I'm always like, oh, I love this. Because it feels, I think, as Andy Cohen and whoever else created Housewives, like, want it to feel. It's just a soap opera. Like, when you see Camille or Adrian at an event, I don't think that they're getting a lot of money, if any, when they show up to certain things, but it's just like this like comfort. And I like, if Eva is like, needs to maybe take a break next season, feel free to let her come to events and prove herself. Like if she's got drama and wants to be back on full time, I'm sure she'll bring the gossip. But like, it seems kind of like, she just seems, there's too many people in Atlanta and I don't think they need her.
I feel kind of bad saying this, but fuck it. I think that Michael Sterling is more interesting than Eva is. When I see Michael Sterling speak, like he did at Mark Daly's Nightmare of a Fundraising Dinner, Michael Sterling is so thoughtful and emotionally available and seemingly just like so responsible. Like if we want to call him a politician, it's like if only all politicians seem to interact like he did. He just seems like such a great guy. And I think of Michael Sterling and I'm like, oh, he's so great. And then I think of Eva, I'm like, I don't even know what to, I feel like I understand her husband more than I get her. I feel like her husband is more connected to himself than she is. And you know, the only way to get to him is to go through her, and God bless. And I think that his remarks at that dinner or whatever the fuck you want to call it were so impactful that honestly, when he was talking and he was talking about his experiences and his adoption process and everything else, I was like truly moved. And so that's great. I mean, I thought it was interesting. It was great. I don't know what else to say.
Well, I also think, you know, what's interesting about that is like, I thought that Eva's relationship with her mother last season when she was getting married and her mom sort of had some.
Oh, I don't remember.
Her mom was like not super nice, and Eva started to cry during a dinner where they went, where her mom was like really dismissive of Eva's like want for the wedding, and Eva like, this is my wedding. And there was like a breakdown, and then she like walked off and the camera like followed her to the bathroom, and then she like came back and she had to like tell her mom like, I need you to be on my side because this is my wedding. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there are things that are maybe interesting about Eva, like her relationship with her mother or her finances, but I think that there's a level of like mystery. Like, I don't think she's willing to go there and show all that stuff. And I think like that is where a housewife suffers, or the show suffers, when people are like, this is off limits. As Vicky said, you don't need to show it all. Well, sometimes you do, because not everyone can depend on their fabulous money,
right?
Or their like really good one-liners. Like sometimes you need to, like, I think that Candy, as she said in her rebuttal video to Nene, you can say I'm boring. Fans can say I'm boring. You can say, why does Candy get a spinoff? But not only am I pitching these things, but also I have people in my life who, if you think I'm boring, there are like seven people in my life who are willing to be on camera, who are dynamic people, who are willing to show things, whether it's my husband or my mom or my aunts or my daughter.
Don Juan.
Don Juan or Candace. Like she has, or Carmen, the best friend.
Carmen, I think.
But like there's all of these other people in my life that are like an ensemble as well, who are willing to go there. And like, I understand like why Greg Leake's older kids might not want to be on a reality show about Nene being like the perfect mom, because it might shade Nene in a way that she doesn't want us to see, because we don't know what the relationship is with Greg and his older kids who are not Nene's children, you know?
Sidebar. So Wendy Williams said that whole shit about Nene quitting the show because Nene texted her and Wendy wanted to be shady. But then Wendy followed it up by being like, guys, there's a big secret and you're going to find out and you're going to feel so bad about her. Then Nene hires Harvey Weinstein's former attorney, Lisa Bloom, child of Gloria Allred. And she does that in a really shady public way by posting it on Instagram. So now we know there's some big secret that Wendy Williams is talking about, and Nene's hired an attorney to protect her. So what the fuck is going on? Are we ever going to know that?
Nene was doing press where she said that Greg was having some sort of like pen pal relationship with one of her employees at like her Baltimore store. Did he read about this?
Yeah, it was in Page Six. I think I posted about it on Instagram, and it was like a very long article that was 9 times longer than it ever needed to be. And I found myself kind of confused by all of it because I just truly didn't care.
And
I
then
mean,
people
like,
were saying that Nene and Greg basically have like an open relationship / understanding, and that like she has a side person in Maryland, like a side dude who she like dates when she's there because she has a store there, and that Greg is like has another person too, which is like, also, I don't care. I actually think that's interesting if you have an open relationship, but because you have a family and you like love each other, but like the whatever has changed, talk about it. on camera, and maybe she's going to. I kind of don't believe she will, but maybe.
Well, she kind of talks around it on last week's after show. And P.S. guys, if you're not watching the after show on YouTube, you're super missing out, because Atlanta, especially, the after shows are very, very strong and they're pretty long. And I'm a big fan of length. And even if it's...
This episode will be 3 hours long.
The girth of last week's after show was fantastic. But so the interviewer asks Nene, like, what the fuck is going on with you guys and Greg? And Nene quasi answers it, quasi avoids it. And the interviewer is like, are you in love with him? And she says, I love him. And is like, would you ever get divorced? And Marlo tries to sort of cut in and help her. And the interviewer senses that and continues asking Nene the questions, which was great. And Nene's response was essentially like, listen, we're family. Like, no matter what, we're family. And P.S., I'm always going to be married to him because he has health issues and wouldn't be covered under, United States of America. He wouldn't be covered under my excellent health insurance if we got divorced. And I love him and care about him. And so we will always be family. But what she's not saying is, like, he is my husband because I want to be his partner romantically and otherwise. And I get that when you're 23 years in or whatever, that's, you know, the idea of that. Sure, the mechanics of it are something else. But it seems to be that she's sort of being open to the fact that, like, they have an arrangement. Like, it's maybe he's living in the basement like he did when he told a radio host that, you know, she owed him $200,000 or whatever. I don't think it's that bad, but I think that they are sort of partners. Like, he comes off a little bit as her husband slash executive assistant. And if he's comfortable with that and she's comfortable with that, and they, you know, like, marriage is defined by whatever you want it to be defined by, as long as hopefully both participants are on the same page. And it appears that not only are they on the same page, but Nene is now ever so gently and slightly more comfortable to discuss the fact that it's not like hot sex. Like, they've ventured and journeyed into a new kind of relationship, you know, where they will be in each other's lives and may technically be married, but it does not appear that they are the kind of married couple or are in the kind of marriage that we saw even when they got remarried. You know, like, there is something else going on. And maybe if he was stepping out or was emotionally unavailable, which we've seen on other franchises, I'm thinking specifically about Married to Medicine, with Dr. Simone and Cecil. You know, do you watch Married to Medicine? I don't think you do.
I don't.
It's okay. You need to somehow find the time right now to watch it. You would fucking die. You would love it. But that was an example of a couple who was on the brink of breaking up. They came to the whatever season reunion and said, we just essentially have to sign the papers, but it's done, because among other problems, he was having an emotional relationship with this other woman. And I wonder if those Page Six articles were referencing this other relationship. And while Nene might be upset about that, it does also seem like they need to find romance somewhere because they're not getting it with each other. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's super fascinating and interesting. And I wonder what their relationship will continue to look like and if we'll ever find out what that secret is.
I think that's incredibly... I would be really fucking pissed if we never find out.
I heard that Greg got someone pregnant in Oakland last year while he was also sick, which was also like... part of why she was struggling so much as this caretaker was because she also knew that he had sort of betrayed her.
And that would explain a lot of her visceral anger, which you can get with, like, you know, care. Oh, my God. I forgot the name of it. I forget the name of it. When you're like overwhelmed as a caregiver, and that could explain some of it. But it did also seem like there was something else that was obviously going on that we weren't being told about.
What do you think about Marlo and the fact that she brought a glam team to Greece? How does Marlo afford that when other women are not doing that in Atlanta?
I think she has arrangements with older, wealthy men who want to take care of her, and she's happy to accept that kind of care. And I think that's how she got you know, the townhouse that she calls, quote unquote, the Hamptons. Like, I think that's how she pays for this stuff. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I wish that we could
I don't know, be kept in the loop a little bit more. I don't think the show knows how to use Marlo as a housewife because of that, because they don't know how to explain, like, what her job is or her life. And I think that, like, she is trying. I don't think that she, like, hoped that her sister would be unable to take care of her children. But I think that there was a part of her that was like, yeah, I'll bring my nephews on the show because, like, I'm helping out in a big way. And it shows me as a different person than I've been shown as. I think that the show, even though the producers might want to make her a housewife, I think that they struggle with how to, because she's such a different thing, because she's not, like, a person who has a man or a fiance or, like, this other career, as, like, she was a real estate broker who is, like, friends with Nene. It's like she sort of always has been, like, this nebulous, like, what are her romantic relationships and what's her financial situation. Anyway.
And also her criminal past. They've never really been able to – all the mugshots. Like, they've never really been able to share that, I think, because they have a lot of concern that behavior. Either I don't know that it's they think that behavior still exists within Marlo, but that they just feel like the escapism of it all, even though that kind of escapism has changed so much in the past several years and with all of these new franchises, I think that they feel like that is a harm to at least the Atlanta franchise.
No, and I think they think it's a harm to the brand too. Like, what kind of, like, you know, like. But then I think that they also shoot themselves in the foot constantly with behavior from other people and other shows who are violent or dubious or whatever.
I mean, at the end of the day, what's worse? Like, Marlo being arrested a million times or what Phaedra did? You know, what Phaedra did was using the franchise to make harm on a cast member. What Marlo did was what Marlo did, which I'm sure she, you know, paid for in whatever way, and it didn't actually feature a cast member, so
the network cut ties with Phaedra and they're able to say, like, well, this was this woman
who
retaliated against a cast member, changed, and we no longer do business with her. Where it's Marlo, it's like, this is a scammer who's been arrested for this, and do we want to do business with this person and make them be an official spokesperson for our network?
So can I ask you a question to slightly pivot but stay on the same conversation topic situation, white wine?
Yeah.
Do you think that the production knew about Beverly Merrill? Is that Danielle's real name, Cop Without a Badge, before they started filming? Obviously, the book became a huge part of season one, but do you think they actually knew about that aspect of her life when they hired her to be a housewife?
It's so hard to know because that was so long ago, and I feel like these, like, reality television has changed, and, like,
yeah,
I think that, like, as we see now, like, on Pump Rules and what was the other show that just had a bad press, like, a new cast member's old stuff came up, Drag Race, like, that, like,
Sherry Hill or whatever, Sherry Pie,
but Sherry Pie and the two guys from Vanderpump Rules, it's like they clearly are still not doing super thorough background checks. So it wouldn't surprise me. My bet would be that they didn't know that about Danielle, and then they probably were excited because they thought it would provide plot and that we'll phase her out if we need to, which they did. You mentioned the Beverly Hills trailer. I loved your Patreon episode about it. I'm excited. I know that you seem a little more, you just rubbed your eyeballs like you're so exhausted.
I can't stop. I know we're supposed to not touch our face. I touch my face every second of the day. I'm doing everything else I possibly can not to get corona. God bless. But, like, I can't stop touching my face.
Well, I think you're an okay. I think now that we're quarantined, it's a little better because you're not going in and out of the house touching things. So
yeah,
you're just touching your own.
I feel bad about it.
You feel like you're touching your own germs.
I should give myself $1 on Venmo every time I touch my face. What can at least make some money off of this. Continue. Sorry, what were you saying about Beverly Hills?
I was just saying, like, how do you feel? Do you have any additional thoughts that were not shared in your Patreon episode? Like, are you into this season? I'm excited by it. I'm excited about Garcelle. I want her to be good, and I'm hopeful. I don't know that she's going to be, like, on Lisa Rinna game, but I'm hoping that she's going to be at least fun, like, Erica Jane season one, or like Dorit season one, or
you think she's gonna be like Erica Jane's? That's giving Garcelle a lot. I mean, I know this whole that's giving Garcelle a lot of credit.
I was into her in the trailer. I thought they were trying to position her as a new cool girl who was sort of like, that's some white people bullshit, and then her like having a fabulous photo shoot on a rooftop. I mean, I had no idea that Erica Jane was gonna be what she was until the season started. So like, I have no reason to think that Garcelle can't be or won't be.
Well, I guess my non-answer is to read a satchel of gold from Philip in Scotland, who sent me a satchel about the Beverly Hills trailer. And Philip from Scotland says, listening to your Patreon Beverly Hills reaction, agree 100% that the Denise drama looks super juicy, but fully expect it to not start until episode 11. So we will have to endure 10 of them being quote unquote fun. I also worry the drama is very produced, pushed. We already know all the details. And when Tom cheated on Lou, we knew nothing until it aired. It wasn't even in trailers because the new footage and drama spoke for itself. AKA, is there a problem in the sense that we already know a lot of what is supposed to happen, and it looks like, according to the trailer itself and the fact that we know that they did a lot of pickups with filming and delayed the trailer in the season, is it an issue that we already know about the Denise and Brandy rumors, and that we know that Denise herself tries to like sort of walk off the show?
No, I think it's no different than knowing that Kenya and Mark separated, or that Michael Darby touched a cameraman, or that Luann was arrested for a DUI. It's like, you know what a headline on TMZ or like People's like reality TV blog says, but like, you don't know anything. Like, the fact that Brandy was in the trailer for like 30 seconds means that this all has to come from other places in the friend group before Brandy probably makes an appearance to like say her piece. So it means that Kyle or Lisa Rinna is coming to the group with information from theoretically from Brandy. So like, I don't know. I'm excited to see how that all plays and how it, like, I feel hopeful because I like Beverly Hills generally as a franchise, and I feel hopeful that it will be interesting and funny.
It's interesting that we talked about Friends Of and how they really support the primary housewives on Atlanta, and how it's like their own little perfect symphony. Like, it really works together. And then I look at Beverly Hills and I'm like, wow, they really just put all of the responsibility and the accountability on women who are either friends of or not even that, like a cameo plus.
Totally.
Like, it's with Camille, like with Brandy, it shows that there's an illness there that production is not fully able to diagnose and or treat, with like the fact that the shit stirrers aren't even primary housewives.
I think that Bravo gives a lot of, I think Bravo gives a lot of preferential treatment to certain housewives, as we've talked about with like Bethany or Candy or Lisa Vanderpump. Mm-hmm. But I think that in Beverly Hills, it's interesting because like, it seems like Kyle has a lot of power there, and then by proxy does Teddy, but that, like, not power, but like she's sort of safe. And then it's like, but I think Erica Jane has power in that I think the network thinks she's a fan favorite and she can't go anywhere. But to me, I feel like I'd rather her get like demoted or not come back, only to bring her back when she's willing to do play the game again. But like, it's not fun to watch people who think they're above the drama, who 2 years ago were willing to go there. It's like, it's no longer fun when people aren't willing to play the game. Like, Teddy never was really willing to play the game, and that was fun for a season for me because it was a different POV. But now it's boring because now you've decided to stay in this world, so you need to evolve and grow in it. And it's like, it's not fun to watch you and Kyle get drunk and you talk about how you want to eat nachos when you're drunk. Like, that's not enough of a character. So I feel bad for Camille and Brandy, and I guess Adrian and Faye Resnick and Kim, who all are showing up in the trailer, and Eileen. God, I love Eileen. Like, all of them showing up for 30 seconds. It's like, it's not up to any of them. The fact that they had to use Adrian Maloof saying this is Beverly Hills in the fucking trailer does not speak well, actually, because does not bode well for the season, maybe, because it's like they have nothing. They have nobody who's in the main cast of the eight women saying something better than Adrian Maloof, who's not probably even getting paid for her one appearance.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're making valid points that I can appreciate about the fact that, listen, these women are and have now become celebrities in this world, Bravo-lebrity, but also something else. And so it would make sense that when actual drama comes to fruition or something that's super gossipy, you know, spreads, that the blogs are going to pick up on it. And it's okay to not necessarily be surprised by that, especially because you're not going to see the actual filmed reactions until the season airs. However, it does to me appear like 90% of the franchise until this Brandy Denise stuff is going to be what Brian Moylan, friend of the show, calls rich people doing things. And while he enjoys that, I do not. I love rich people doing things with something else there. And it doesn't feel like there's any other tension. And what these women have proven is that they are more interested in protecting these each other and forming an alliance than they are revealing vulnerabilities and real life goings on in real time. And it annoys me, especially on Beverly Hills, for two reasons. One, I'm rewatching season three. I started with the Adrian surrogacy stuff when Brandy reveals that because I just wanted to like deep dive into actual drama and gossip. And it is so fucking good that I highly encourage that people rewatch Hulu Plus, everything and more. But then I look at this upcoming season and I look at last season's horror show and I think about the fact that when they were filming in Baja Mar, a woman went up to Dorit and said, "Your husband owes my friend money," or whatever the fuck, and it went viral, and yet it was never truly covered on the show. And I think about Mauricio's lawsuit. I think about Erica Jane's Tom Girardi's lawsuit. I think about what Dorit is going through with PK, and it pisses me off that we are weighing all of the drama against Denise, who's on an island by herself, and Brandy, who has a vested interest in becoming a part of the plot, and yet that there are these very real things that are happening that these women care a lot about covering up. And yet it feels to me like what we are going to get is if someone references it, they're just going to do so that they can check that off the list and they're not going to go any further.
Why do you think it is that the cast, like, you know, Camille did bring up Dorit's money situation.
And then got bullied into apologizing and being like, "Oh, it was so bad." And then everybody else being like, "God, that was so bad." And Camille being like, "I'm so sorry. I can't believe I did that." When in fact, Camille was doing the job that these other women should have been doing.
Right. And like, Camille didn't have a good showing at the reunion because, again, right, we talked about this in first version of recording this. But like, Camille showed up to that reunion
to
do
her secret tapes.
Camille showed up to that reunion to do her job, which was to be held accountable for her behavior and to get to say her piece. She didn't want to be there. She got out there. Those women all reamed her out, and then she cried and she walked off, and they were like, "What a fucking, you know, terrorist,"
cunt,
basically.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they're comparable people, but I feel like similarly, like, Danielle did the most despicable thing on Housewives of New Jersey. Got pulled out there, they didn't let her talk, and then she got pulled away, and then Teresa was not held accountable. So it's like, I'm sort of mad at this idea. Like, at least Atlanta doesn't do that. You know what I mean? Like, Tanya and Marlo are doing a lot, but they're not in the hot seat. Like, they're not
because
in the
there's
hot
more stuff going on. There's other, there are B and C and D plots.
And that's what's, like, so irritating. It's like, I never thought about the connection between Danielle and Camille, but it is similar in that they both came out of the reunion. People talked over them the entire time. Danielle became super defensive and then pretended like she was quitting a job that she's had for however long. And Camille started to cry and felt attacked. And the women basically were like, thank God she's gone. Like, good riddance, kumbaya. And they like held hands at the end. And Andy was like, well, and it's like, Andy knows what's happening. They made Camille come to that reunion. They also made her come back this season to film, even though they didn't offer her a full-time position because I just like, I don't know, like, who, why isn't Lisa Rinna? Like, why didn't Lisa Rinna and Denise pair up together and take down Dorit or Teddy? That would have been the correct thing was to say, if I was Lisa Rinna, it was to look at my, you know, quote unquote friend of X amount of years. It's probably, I'll pretend. They probably did, like, both were on Melrose Place in the same season, not interacting at all. But, like, this is my fake friend. We're both coming back. I can't believe Teddy is coming back. Well, this time, let's the two of us team up and bring her down. And if we can get Erica or Garcelle to come on our side to take her down, great. But if not, at least we have each other's back. It's so strange to me that we're going to do the same exact thing, theoretically, based on seeing nothing, that we're going to do the same thing, which is all women against one person, which is like fun for like three episodes, but then becomes exhausting because if you're me, then you start to like have empathy for the person who's on the outs, regardless of whether you think that they are like wrong or not. You know, it's like, it's not fun to just watch one person get knocked down over and over again because we all are multifaceted. And like, as you said, all of these women have real life drama that's happening in other ways. And it doesn't even have to be drama, but like other things happening in your life. And also we can also hold each other accountable and get over things. But I'm sure that Kyle and Teddy have had disagreements. They can talk about it on the show. They literally can just like get into a fight and get over it after six episodes. But we still need to see other people have conflict. It can't be six people against one.
And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I do kind of understand what you're saying in the context of comparing Camille and Danielle, with one enormous caveat, which is that on New Jersey, I didn't think Danielle, and I still stand behind this, needed to come back because there was so much other drama that was going on. And I say that appreciating that we would not have had as spectacular a finale as we would have without Danielle coming back to bury Tree. But at least on Jersey, there is genuine conflict that exists that doesn't feel false and doesn't feel produced. And the Danielle stuff felt like a produced element that Tree was using to her advantage as needed and then let go when she was done.
Yeah.
On Beverly Hills, you don't have that. That doesn't exist. There is no other conflict.
The only conflict was Camille stuff with everybody.
And now they're transitioning that into this stuff with Brandy. And what's that whole thing with like, you know, when you like start to work at a firm or whatever, like the last one hired is the first one out. It feels like that is what these women have decided to do, where since Denise was the last one brought in, she was the one that this already existing alliance has decided to disband with because they don't have the kind of agreement with her that they have with each other. And that is very problematic for me because I feel like in the worst case scenario, we're going to start this upcoming season with the second half of last season, which is where these women sit there, they do nothing, they smile, nothing happens, and we wait for Brandy to show up. That is really not great to me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess TBD to see if anybody, like they did, the trailer did a good job of alluding that Garcelle was shading all the women in an acceptance speech. I'm sure that that's not true. And that also Sutton,
I'm sure that that's not true.
And then yeah. Sutton has some sort of beef with Teddy, which I am into. I'm into someone showing up and being like, Teddy, you're boring. Why are you here? That's amazing to me. I just don't know if that's like totally taken out of context to be something bigger than it is, you know?
Yeah, I not to be a super Debbie Downer about this, but why not? It's a shoe that fits. I feel like the Sutton moment feels like it's going to be overblown or at least extremely exacerbated by these women who are looking for something to talk about that doesn't actually involve sacrificing themselves or each other. P.S. Poor sweet Sutton, who was announced as a full-time cast member. And sometimes this happens where you hear about someone joining the cast and we think she's going to be full-time, but it seems like Sutton herself assumed she would be full-time. And then because of some mishigas happening with her ex-husband, she's now downsized to a friend of, which from what she's saying on social, she appears to be, I don't know, a Tanya plus, like someone who's friendly and personable, who also has the benefit of having, I think, a lot of money and wants to play the game, but for whatever reason isn't being allowed to, at least not fully this season, which is unfortunate. What can you say? Pray for Sutton. I don't know. Can we finish up the New York taglines, which is something we started but did not complete?
Oh, what a great way to bookend the episode. Us not finishing a thought.
For the first time ever. Tinsley Mortimer's upcoming tagline, life isn't a fairy tale, but I'm hoping mine's the exception.
Terrible. One of the worst.
Truly. And there's something that you could have said there, but this is, life isn't a fairy tale. Say something else. Like, life isn't a fairy tale, continue that thought, but I'm hoping mine's an exception could literally be used for absolutely anything, anywhere, at any time.
What like, if it was like, I was looking for my happy ever after, who knew I was the ugly stepsister?
I was looking for my happy ever after, but I guess I'll just settle for a happy ending. Like, there's a way to, she would never say that, but like, there's a way to like, there's a way to be shady or funny, but this doesn't, it's like you started with a concept and then you just chopped it off at the knees. Like that
mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the last single girl of them all?
Not me, because I'm engaged to the coupon cabin. She's doing all of these like stay-at-home quarantine humble brags where she's showing the video of Scott sprawling
is
Chicago
she also,
penthouse.
Does she quit in the middle of the season?
She says she doesn't, so that means she definitely does. stay tuned. And then finally, new full-time housewife Leah McSweeney. I may float like a butterfly, but I sting like a bitch.
Somebody on Twitter was like, yas, mama, best tagline of a new housewife ever. And I was like, am I in a different world? Like, it's maybe one of the better ones of this terrible bunch.
Which is, again, a very low bar. Like, yes. I agree with you. I read it and I was like, okay. And then I went online and every single gay was like, oh my God, Queen, yes, you call yourself a bitch. Butterflies unite, Mariah. And I'm like, no, I don't. I'm sorry. Not to be a complete hag downer, but like, my God, I just don't see it. I just don't see it. But I do see her being a great compliment. But again, I don't know how I feel about New York. I'm really.
She seems a little wild, which is interesting. Like, there's nobody. I thought that they would cast somebody who was a little more grounded to be like the counter to everybody's wild.
I think she's going to be what Dorinda thinks she is.
Yeah, maybe.
Where it's like you're funny, you're sassy, you're quippy, but you don't necessarily have that dark side. And I think Dorinda doesn't engage or agree with the fact that she goes through a lot of complications in life, even though, sidebar, allegedly that's what the season is about in many ways. And I think that Leah probably represents the idea that many of these women have of who they are, even though they're probably not deserving of thinking of themselves in that way. Not just youth. And Leah, P.S., I don't think brings with her a lot of wealth of any kind, but just the idea of being fun and bright and quippy and swearing and cool and whatever else. I think these women still think and still see themselves in that way. And P.S., that's probably why Ramona is so fascinating to so many people, because she is the cool mom, K-E-W-L. And maybe Leah will represent that. I don't know. I see some sort of comparison and thread to that. I don't know if it entirely works. And I don't know if
there's Ramona and Leah, maybe?
Between Leah and I think between Leah and Ramona, Sonia, possibly Dorinda, and maybe even Luann. Like, okay. Leah might be a better thread for these women than Tinsley, aside from Tinsley having like the Mercer / Mortimer name behind her, if that mm-hmm. makes any sense. Like, Leah seems to be this kind of like New York woman who a lot of these women may think that they are in personality, if not zip code. Like, these are women who at one point were like all about the Upper E. And Leah seems to be more like cool rocker girl downtown. And there are elements of that kind of personality that I think that, you know, whether they're going to Sushi Rocks and breaking wine glasses or whatever else, these women still think they are perpetually a young lady in her early 40s. And obviously that's no longer the case. And I wonder how much of a clash, if any, there will be when they come into contact with someone who is potentially more grounded than Tinsley, which, I mean, that's not a super.
Don't you think that the network wanted Tinsley because they wanted her mom, and then they thought that Tinsley was a person who was infamous, who wanted to be famous and on television, and they got like it's a 2-for-1 sort of thing?
I don't think they looked at Tinsley because of her mom. I think her mom was a happy bonus that came out maybe through auditioning or whatever else. I think they looked at Tinsley because Tinsley was truly the first kind of celebrity socialite. And she was a great catch. And P.S., you know, she was a celebrity socialite who sort of crashed and burned and in Palm Beach. And now, you know, regardless of whether or not she actually lived in New York, which is questionable, she was a woman who had a true celebrity name. Where it was the combination of like being a Mercer, which nobody really cares about, being a Mortimer, which many people do, even though she's a former, and, you know, being the woman with the golden curls who Dior named a lip gloss and possibly a nail polish after her. I mean, she brought a lot of cachet, which in New York specifically would carry weight.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the kind of princess, which, you know, Bethany is like a YSL, Comme des Garçons, that's too cool for her, like actually cool, but like YSL kind of like black leather, whatever. And Tinsley represents an opposite version of that, like the tulle and the sparkle and the curled hair and the eyelashes. Can't show up in public without a full face unless my dog has died. And then, you know, whatever happens is just, I don't know what. But I think that for Bravo, she was a big catch. And I think that she was great. And I assume that, you know, we're going to see the last of her this season. It seems like she's really made a choice. I mean, the fact that her proposal with Scott wasn't covered by any camera but her mother's iPhone is a real loss to us. And something that we really could have used, especially if the reason that she's leaving the show is because she's making that sacrifice to marry this guy who doesn't totally love it. I mean, that's unfortunate, but life is a series of misfortunes, and we're just hoping to see as many of them on camera as we possibly can.
Speaking of misfortunes, can we talk about the fact that Claudia Jordan auditioned to be on The Real Housewives of Dallas?
Can you please tell me about this? Because I do not understand it. You texted me about it, and I'm so confused.
So I had been following some sort of like blog where they were talking about Claudia Jordan. I don't know what it was a post about, but it was something about Housewives of Dallas, and Claudia commented on Instagram being like, like, Dallas is a city where there are a lot of women of color who are wealthy and a part of the social scene who you should be considering for your show, yada, yada, yada. And Carrie with a K, responded and was like, Claudia, I can't believe you would be hateful like this. I was so excited when I heard that you had auditioned. I was really hoping you were going to be on the show. But do you think that like Latin women don't count to add spice or diversity to the series? And, what else? Oh, and don't you think this should apply to other cities then? Does Atlanta have representation of Latin women? And then Claudia was like, okay, listen, Carrie, I wasn't even talking about my own experience. She was like, yes, I had one Skype interview about joining the cast, and that's as far as it went. And this was nothing about me and my own personal investment in the franchise. It was more just about like that Dallas has like a burgeon, like a scene of women, of like black women that are wealthy and that should be like considered to make the show represent like what the city actually represents, yada, 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 yada. And I had just was very surprised. I liked Claudia a lot on Atlanta, and I felt like she got an unfair shake because of NeNe at the time.
I 1,000% agree with you. I don't see a world in which she exists on Dallas, but I think that's has nothing to do with her talent and power, and everything to do with Dallas itself is in shambles, and I don't know how any of them are going to work. So I would love to see Claudia on essentially any franchise. I think she's really funny, aside from I don't see her working out on Beverly Hills, but she could even fucking work on Orange County. I just don't see, I don't know that she could work on Jersey, but I could see her in New York. I could see her in Atlanta. I could see her in Orange County. And Dallas, I just don't see anybody on. So if she didn't work out, it's probably to her benefit. And Carrie with a K can go fuck herself. I don't care.
When are we going to see a housewife from one franchise join another franchise? It's about bound to happen at this point.
I could see Cynthia being a friend of on Beverly Hills and them sort of trying it out. If it is true that when she gets married to Mike Hill, they chill in L.A. Kelly Dodd, let's see what happens with I just forgot his name. Rick. Oh, my God. Why did I just I've had
yeah,
so
Rick
much wine.
Is his name.
Because she's hoping that he gets transferred to California, but Fox may decide to keep him East Coast. And she's made some comments relating to moving Jolie across the country that I don't think Michael Dodd will be terribly interested in agreeing to. So, you know, if that happened, I could see her moving to New York, but obviously she's incredibly important to keep on Orange
Kelly
County.
Can you imagine Kelly Dodd on Real Housewives of New York?
I mean, I can, but I think it would be a mess.
It would be a totally different show. I don't even know how those women would deal with that. I mean, she is good friends with Ramona, I suppose.
And Dorinda, but not also, husband.
It's different when you're friendly with somebody in real life opposed to with friends with them when you're on camera, because Ramona might feel threatened by Kelly's, like, behavior on camera or embarrassed of it, and that, therefore, I think it's a totally different show suddenly. Kelly is
specific.
Wild. She is specific.
Are we going to see? So, okay. Lala and Rand's wedding has been postponed. I assume that Stassi and Beau are going to have to choose another location instead of Italy. So Cynthia and Kelly, I believe, were due to get married on the same day. I forget if it was in October or November. Are we going to see either of those weddings? I don't know if they're going to exist because social distancing being what it is, if people are allowed to be outside in early fall, I don't know how that will work for larger scale gatherings. Kelly's wedding is one that I want to see. I think Cynthia's is lovely and I wish her the best, you know, gifts in the mail and it's a smile for me. But
it's so hard to predict like what anything looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be unfortunate. I want to see Kelly and Rick separately melt down and then come back together. And say I do. That's going to be a shit show of a wedding. Can you imagine? Oh my God. And like, I don't even want to get into it, but can you imagine the guest list? It's going to be a shit show. It's going to be a huge shit show.
Sarah, did you watch Housewives? I mean, did you watch Basketball Wives? You were supposed to do that as homework. Did you?
You told me that you were going to share, you paid for the season for me to watch it, but I don't think I have it.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Folks, we're going to do a Patreon episode where Sarah watches season 7 of Basketball Wives.
Can we do a Patreon episode right now where we yell about Danielle Staub because we only referenced her and I have some incredible satchels I want to get your thoughts on?
Sure.
Love. So guys, speaking of Patreon, as I have mentioned maybe during this episode, but once again, hashtag wine, I am an event producer and who knows if I will ever have a career path again ever. And listen, enjoy all of your career benefits because I get exactly zero for being an independent contractor. So all this to say, I love all of your love and support for Andy's Girls and the single best way to keep Andy's Girls on track, BCC, my grocery store bill from Fresh Direct, is to join Patreon. It is my birthday wish with my birthday, my blessed birthday, 10:30 a.m. March 27th, 1998, is that you guys join Patreon. It starts at $2 a month. It is the single best way to support Andy's Girls. You get tons of extra bonus content. Damien and I are about to yell at each other about Damien Staub. I think he would be totally fine with that name. About Danielle Staub, and I really, really appreciate it. So if you haven't joined Patreon already, you get bonus episodes, bonus content, and knowing that you yourself are making the difference for Andy's Girls, my defunct checking savings. So on behalf of Patreon, in parentheses, patreon.com/Andy's Girls, which I will also include in the show notes for this episode, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate that. Speaking of appreciation, I hope you guys are all staying indoors, washing your hands every 30 seconds. Every 2 minutes of listening to this episode, please wash your hands for 20 seconds. Do not forget your thumbs and wrists. And then watch Ramona Singer's Washing My Hands in Instagram video, which is frankly something to treasure. Guys, I hope you are staying healthy and safe. Damien Bellino, tell the folks how to listen to episodes of your amazing podcast you might know her from.
You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts at You Might Know Her From, or you can follow me on social media at Damien Bellino, and you can find all the links there.
And guys, I do all of my satchel collections mostly via Instagram and Twitter. Some of you guys get in touch through my website, sarahgalley.com. I always love that. But really, I do polls, question and answers, Insta stories. Maybe I'll do some live Instagram, which I haven't done before. Ooh, yay. All of that you can find at Twitter at Sarah Galley, Instagram at Dame Galley. My God, birthday coming up this week, Damien Bellino, but you are one of my greatest gifts. Look at what I just did there. OMG. Can I? That was quite a laugh of appreciation. That's what I call a groan. So I'm going to get another glass of wine. I feel hot and bothered, but I think that's the white from Paris. I don't even know what the fuck this is, but I know I definitely need more of it. And then we were going to discuss all things Danielle Staub. Guys, I love you. I hope that you are thinking about things that make you happy and bring you joy. Try to do that at least once a day. If you haven't called your family or friends yet to check in, please do so. I highly encourage it. And I highly encourage Damian Bellino coming back every other day. I hope this worked out. I hope the audio is okay. This is a whole new world for Andy's girls as we enter this whole new world of existence. But Damian, you are, as always, amazing.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, guys, we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. Okay.
So I should stop, yeah?
Yeah, let's stop.